Brains finally meet.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Is it me or have we been hitting it out of the park with some of these shows the past couple weeks? I have received so many emails already and Facebook messages about yesterday's show. I thought I was too angry when I was defending Kenneth Krause against Jennifer Livingston's accusation that he bullied her because of her obesity. And boy, the outpouring of people who say they agree, they've been silent about it, they're glad I did that show. I guess I didn't sound as angry as I thought. At least I didn't turn off the regular listeners. We've got a great show planned. We're going to be jumping through a lot of topics today. During the first half hour, we have Dr. Mikhail Kalonin coming on to talk about how obesity promotes tumor growth regardless of diet. Very, very important discussion for both men and women. After that, Dr. P.J. Brooks from the National Institute of Health will be coming on to discuss moderate alcohol consumption and breast cancer in women, from epidemiology to mechanisms and interventions. Then during the second hour, we have the Subversity Science Roundup, where Adele Musa brilliantly, all the way from Munster, Germany, comes on the air to apply the Subversity sniff test to science in the news. And let's find out if they're telling us the truth or is the media trying to dumb things down because they think we can't understand the truth. So that'll be during the second hour. But let's get started. Dr. Kalonin, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to be on the show.
Yes, my pleasure. And actually, I'm going to tell people now, you're going to hear more about Dr. Kalonin because he's working on some exciting stuff that I want to talk more about in later shows. But today's discussion is very, very important. There has always been a suspicion that obesity promotes cancers in general. Tell me about your study that you did over at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston.
Yes, so first of all, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm a part of the Institute of Molecular Medicine here in Houston, and specifically I'm at the Center for Regenerative Stem Cell and Regenerative Medicine. So my laboratory works at the junction of stem cell biology, obesity, and cancer research. And what we're interested in is how fat tissue promotes cancer progression. And let me just start a little bit broad here. So just to define the problem, we've known for about 10 years now that obesity is a big risk factor for cancer mortality.
Right.
About 10 years ago, we found out that colorectal cancer, breast cancer, and endometrial cancer in women are associated with the risk of those cancers is associated with obesity, and colorectal cancer more in men than in women, actually. And over the next few years, it's also become apparent that progression of cancer is also associated with obesity. And by progression, I refer to the likelihood of someone dying once cancer is diagnosed. And we really didn't know why that was. Initially, the assumption has been that it's simply the diet and the lifestyle of the patient which accounts for this link. And as people started doing research in animal models, the possibility has been, you know, brought up that maybe it's not only diet per se, but the excess fat tissue, which is what's really responsible for obesity onset and development, maybe that's what plays a role. So what we started doing several years ago when I have started my lab here at the University of Texas, we designed several animal models in which we started looking how excess fat tissue might be able to promote tumor growth on animals that are on the same diet. So we compared obese animals and lean animals that were on the same diet from the time they got tumors. And what we discovered in a publication that came out last week in Cancer Research was that tumors grow faster in animals that are obese, that have more fat tissue, even though they're on the same diet as the animals that are lean.
So what was the mechanism that was discovered? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of information out there that shows that white fat cells, the most prominent in obese people, tends to be pro-inflammatory for a variety of reasons. There's intrinsic and extrinsic reasons, partially because the fat itself acts like a gland, if you will, producing cytokines and other things. What did you guys discover was the mechanism that, that fat may cause the progression of cancers and even tumors?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Carl. So let me give just a little bit of introduction on adipose tissue, fat tissue, as we simply refer to it. Specifically, by the way, we talk about white fat tissue as opposed to brown fat tissue,
right,
which, you know, may be good for us. And brown fat tissue is a specific type of adipose tissue, which was discovered in humans just recently, in adults. It used to be thought that only newborns have brown fat, but so that's a separate subject. Now we know that we have brown fat as well as adults, and that may be actually protecting us against obesity. But white fat tissue is what really expands in obesity and responsible for obesity. And the tissue is complex. You know, it looks just like a fat fluffy mass, but it's actually composed of a number of different types of cells. And what we refer to fat cells typically is adipocytes. Adipocytes are the large cells that accumulate lipid droplets and store energy. And they grow larger as obesity progresses, and also we get more of them in morbid obesity cases in fat tissue. So it's both proliferation and hypertrophy of those cells which is responsible for obesity. But in addition to adipocytes, there is a number of other different types of cells that compose adipose tissue, and those include progenitors of adipocytes or adipose stem cells, which is what we paying the closest attention to in our research. And in addition to that, there are other important types of cells, such as endothelial cells that make blood vessels in fat tissue, and infiltrating cells of blood, leukocytes, which are actually the cells that are responsible for inflammation, which is associated with obesity. So complex interaction amongst those different cell populations definitely play a big role in obesity progression, as well as in the effect of fat tissue on other organs in our bodies, as well as on tumors when we unfortunately get them. So what people have hypothesized when it became apparent that fat tissue may have a direct effect on tumor growth was that perhaps it's the endocrine factors that you mentioned, secreted adipose tissue, that play a role. Like you said, adipocytes, the fat cells, secrete many different trophic
hormones.
Factors, hormones, cytokines.
And there's another thing that most of us don't necessarily discuss because it's hard to quantify in one individual to another, but they're also depots for toxins and xenoestrogens and other things that have been shown to have oncogenic effects. So, you know, this is a whole nother area, the people who've been exposed to greater degrees of toxins and stuff.
You're absolutely right. So there are various kinds of molecules that can become mobilized from adipose tissue when it starts undergoing remodeling. And in cancer patients, adipose tissue does start undergoing remodeling, especially imagine the situation when the patient is subjected to chemo or radiotherapy. A lot of times it is associated with drastic changes in metabolism and weight loss. And when fat tissue starts being reconstructed, many molecules start getting shed by the tissue, and the toxins are among those. Hormones are among those, and steroid hormones specifically become bioavailable at higher levels as a result of adipose tissue overgrowth.
You know, I'm sorry. We have to go into a break, and I want hold your thought. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
I want to mention something here before we go into the break. It's very, very critical to this discussion when we come back. There is a growing body, no pun intended, of people out there who believe that obesity in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, because there are plenty of obese people out there who have that are normotensive. They have normal blood pressure. Their lipids really aren't that whacked out, and they may even not present severe insulin resistance yet. They may still be under that 100 curve in the morning, where doctors go, "Well, you're really not diabetic yet. Keep working on it." So there's an argument out there that some people will say, "Well, look, obesity in and of itself is not the problem. You know, it's these other diseases." But what this shows here is that there is both an intrinsic and extrinsic effect of obesity. There are some silent things going on in the obese body that cannot be gauged by the traditional markers that the medical orthodoxy checks. And that is these things here we're talking about, the myriad of effects that your fat cells have on the inflammatory response and the toxification of your body that leads to cancers. So I want to go into the break now with everybody remembering this discussion, because obesity in and of itself is a very dangerous thing. We've been talking about it a lot lately because it's really a big issue in this country. And it's not just, "Hey, I'm obese, but I don't have any of the markers of disease, so I'm good. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing." There are things going on in your body that are going to catch up to you. When we come back, we're going to pick it up with Dr. Kolonin. We're talking about obesity promotes tumor growth regardless of diet. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. WhayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WhayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only three ingredients in WhayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WHEYNaturalUSA.com. True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Two of H-Force's most popular transdermal patches are now available as a buy one, get one free. The Testo 100 Testosterone Boosting Patch has the most comprehensive assortment of clinically proven testosterone boosters, including androstenedione trione, D-aspartic acid, and stinging nettle root. The Power Patch has 25 milligrams of real growth hormone per patch. Now get a two-month supply for the price of one of either patch, or combine them both for greater results. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the H-Force banner ad to learn more. Build muscle and burn fat with increased testosterone and growth hormone with this buy one, get one free offer. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Mikhail Kalonin. We're talking about how obesity promotes tumor growth regardless of diet. So, Dr. Kalonin, let's pick up where we left off, the discussion about the what the fat cells are actually doing that seems to be promoting cancer progression.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to comment on your interesting comment regarding, you know, how obese we need to be to start getting, you know, our health affected, and then I'll go back to discussing stem cells. So, yeah, it's an interesting point that you're bringing up, because officially obesity is defined as the body mass index of 30 or above, and this is what cancer risk or progression has been linked
I would debate that. My audience is listening to you say that right now, and they're thinking, Carl, why aren't you speaking up? And I would debate that. BMI is flawed. I am a BMI of 32 right now for six foot two inches. But I'm a close to 10% body fat. I carry a lot of muscle on my body. So
this is exactly what I was going to say. Okay. The body mass index is misleading, and what we need to be paying attention to is abdominal adiposity as opposed to body mass, because we have two types of fat tissue in our bodies roughly. It's subcutaneous fat tissue and visceral fat tissue, which is around our guts, and it's the visceral fat tissue which is bad for our health, and that's the one which is associated with diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer, apparently. So, as opposed to subcutaneous fat tissue, which may actually protect us against the lipotoxicity and the diabetic effects of visceral adiposity. So, this is one comment. And as far as different types of cells within adipose tissue, yes, and the other thing that I wanted to say is that, yes, it's not clear how much adipose tissue we need to have and for how long before it starts negatively affect us. And it's an interesting subject of discussion. I guess we're going to learn about this more in the future. There is something that I would possibly discuss in the end of our talk if we have some time, which is called the obesity paradox, which is an interesting medical observation made several years ago that patients who had undergone invasive surgery actually recover better if they're obese.
Yeah, I saw that. That's actually posted in our article section of our website, but I haven't promoted it because that's one of those epidemiological things like, what causes fires in Manhattan? Well, according to epidemiology, fire trucks do, because every time there's fire trucks, right? So epidemiology, you got to be very cautious with how you make these linkages, and you must use critical thinking skills. You know, there's more
to it. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And this is what we do as scientists. We use our critical thinking skills, and we try to make sense out of observations that that statisticians make. So when statisticians made an association between cancer and obesity, we figured that maybe adipose tissue does something to fuel tumor growth. And one thing that many different researchers have started looking at is the molecules secreted by fat tissue, which are collectively called adipokines, and this is what we started discussing. Hormones, cytokines, growth factors, survival factors, fatty acids, and all of those molecules in experimental models, either directly or indirectly, promote tumor cell proliferation or proliferation of tumor blood vessel cells. So they could work as endocrine factors, and from remote fat tissue depots fuel tumor growth. But what we hypothesized and what we demonstrated in our study that we published last week is that perhaps cells from adipose tissue can traffic from the fat tissue depot to the tumor through the body and become a component of the tumor and then start working from within the tumor. The reason we hypothesized that is that the stem cells of adipose tissue are known to be migratory. They respond to inflammation and hypoxia signals released by wounds or tumors, and they can migrate to them and engage in tissue repair. This is what their function is. They're called mesenchymal stem cells, and their natural role is in to repair wounded tissues. And the tumor is a wound that never heals. So in experimental models, it's been demonstrated that those mesenchymal stem cells, including adipose mesenchymal stem cells, are recruited by wounds and tumors to fix the tissue damage, except that in tumors they can never complete the fixing. They keep on fixing it, but because the wound is chronic, they just keep on doing it and doing it, and they keep on getting recruited if you give them a chance.
So in the cell world, they are enablers. They enable the tumor cell to grow because they give the tumor cell unlimited resources to grow.
This is exactly what they do. And the way they do this is by first becoming a component of tumor blood vessels, and second, by secreting those growth factors, the same growth factors that adipose tissue secretes from the distance, except now they start secreting those adipokines from within the tumor. Those growth factors, survival factors, hormones, possibly, they start secreting them from within the tumor, and the tumor cells get them at much higher concentrations because the cells are right there. So they become those invaders, the Trojan horse soldiers that sit within the tumor now and help the tumor. They try to do, you know, a good thing.
Yeah, they're doing their job. The problem is that the tumor cell is a rogue cell that has enlisted their normal function to help it proliferate. And I thought of something else when you talk about it. There's another factor here that could be playing a role. We know that soft tissue and collagen actually plays a role in sequestering a tumor so it cannot take root. Mm-hmm. But if the tumor cell lands within fatty tissue, it has a cornucopia of everything it needs right there, and the collagen it can't get to it to sequester it. It almost could take hiding in the fat cells to start its growth. It's almost like it's the petri dish for the tumor to go to.
It is an interesting thought. Well, one thing that, you know, is known is that certain types of cancer, and actually the ones that are associated with obesity, such as the breast cancer and the prostate cancer, they tend to metastasize to the bone marrow. And the bone marrow in patients that get metastasis is no longer red bone marrow, it's yellow bone marrow. And it's made of adipose tissue. Uh-huh. If you look at the bone marrow of patients who get metastasis, there are adipocytes there within the bone. So
let me ask you a question. Is there evidence that the body has to have a certain amount of body fat before it overflows and starts to take up residency in the bone marrow? Or is this some other pathology that is unexplained that even happens to lean people who are metastatic in nature?
This is not known at the moment. There is not enough data that we have collected, and I know that a number of people are looking at that. But I can tell you that this conversion of the red bone marrow into this fatty bone marrow is something just happening in age. So it's an age-related phenomenon.
Okay.
It may be also associated with obesity. There are some data to suggest that.
Well, I mean, obesity, when you become obese, the overflow of available fat takes up residency in organs that is never supposed to. Fatty liver disease, fat in the kidneys. If you keep putting on fat, your body can only put it in so many places before it has to shove it in places it doesn't belong. And bone marrow could be one of those places.
Correct, but what you are referring to is actually migration and dissemination of lipids within the body and the accumulation in lipids in cells other than adipocytes. And that does happen. And malignant cells, they do grab lipids as sources of energy. And there are some studies supporting that. notion. What we found in our paper that came out last week is an interesting thing that is not appreciated enough. What turns out to be the case is that those adipose stem cells, once they migrate to tumors and become a component of tumor microenvironment, one thing that they do is they become vessel-associated cells, and they help blood flow.
Sure.
And
Yes.
The other thing that they do is they differentiate into the fat cells, mature fat cells, the adipocytes that accumulate lipids for living. This is the those intratumoral adipocytes have been characterized in several types of cancer now, and we currently don't understand what they do. It's possible that those adipocytes hidden within the tumors and accumulating lipids are, you know, very important for cancer progression, and we need to understand more about them.
Dr. Kolonin, we have just a few minutes left in the interview. So what do you hope that both individuals and even clinicians take away from this research?
Well, one thing that we need to understand is that the stromal cells are a potentially very important drug target in cancer. And by stromal cells, I refer to mesenchymal progenitor cells, which we describe and call adipose stem cells. Adipose
right.
stem cells are essentially mesenchymal stromal cells that become a component of the tumor, and those stromal cells can make up to 50% of tumor mass or more in some types of cancer. Only 10 to 15% of cells in the tumor are malignant cells. The rest is stroma and vasculature. And we know how to kill malignant cells, and we cannot cure cancer. We know how to destroy blood vessels. We cannot cure cancer. We need to come up with drugs that will destroy stromal cells within tumors, and we're working on drugs targeting adipose stromal cells.
Well,
so this is one.
I see another available avenue for dealing with this, but unfortunately it does not take into account pharmacology, and that is for individuals to become responsible for their own bodies and reduce the amount of adipose tissue. And I'll tell you something else I want to mention to you if you haven't seen this, but you know the common procedure of liposuction?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now it's been discovered the body is so intelligent, Dr. Kolonin. It's so much smarter than we are that we're trying to figure it out, and it's laughing in our face. When people go for liposuction on their thighs, their buttocks, their stomach, the body reproduces that fat, but it goes, hey, we have to put it deeper in the body so it doesn't get taken away this time. So when somebody goes for liposuction, we now know that visceral fat increases. To balance out what was just stolen from the body, and the body goes, well, I'm going to put it where they can't get it. I'm going to put it over here around the kidneys.
That's right. So one would think that measures against obesity would protect us against cancer, and in fact, bariatric surgery does protect. So that's the only really effective way, gastric bypass and such. Liposuctions are not effective, and dieting can actually be dangerous as well, because what you're doing is you're suffocating adipose tissue, and you're inducing it to undergo remodeling. So if you don't have cancer yet, then it may be a good thing. If you do have a cancer, and if you start working on your body fat, it may be dangerous, and we need to understand better what happens before we start saying that everyone needs to get on a diet or undergo liposuction.
I agree. But assuming somebody doesn't have cancer, this is the way. But you're right. There's evidence that women who undergo rapid, dramatic body fat loss, like 100 pounds they tend to develop certain estrogen-dependent cancers because of the xeno and phytoestrogens, plus the aromatase effects of the fat releasing estradiol into the bloodstream, this onrush of estrogenic type compounds that just floods the body. The body's not. That's why you can't lose fat faster than you put it on. If it took you 10 years to put it on, be prepared to take at least 4 or 5 years to take it off. This nonsense of having to lose weight so quickly is we're going to have.
So the conclusion is that it's all about obesity prevention, not obesity treatment.
Yes, yes, yes. Listen, that's why I want more people to listen to the show, to help prevent obesity. Dr. Kolonin, I want to thank you. We are going to have you back on because of your book, Stem Cell Mobilization. Lots of good discussions we will have with Dr. Kolonin in the future. Thanks for being on the show today.
It was great to be on. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have Dr. P.J. Brooks on from the National Institutes of Health talking about alcohol consumption and breast cancer. another continuous theme on the show. Stay tuned.
Over 35% of all men over 20 will struggle with painful chronic prostatitis at some time in their lives. Relaxin is a novel dietary supplement shown in a preliminary retrospect study to be more effective than antibiotics at relieving symptoms of chronic prostatitis. Relaxin is safe and effective for men. If you suffer from prostatitis and don't want to take powerful drugs, antibiotics, or risk procedures, give Relaxin a try. Go to bioadvantex.com to learn more. That's bioadvantex.com. Stop living with embarrassing pain and symptoms associated with chronic prostatitis today. Get Relaxin, R-E-L-E-X-I-N.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Two of AgeForce's most popular transdermal patches are now available as a buy one, get one free. The Testo 100 testosterone boosting patch has the most comprehensive assortment of clinically proven testosterone boosters, including androstenedione, D-aspartic acid, and stinging nettle root. The power patch has 25 milligrams of real growth hormone per patch. Now get a 2-month supply for the price of one of either patch, or combine them both for greater results. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the AgeForce banner ad to learn more. Build muscle and burn fat with increased testosterone and growth hormone with this buy one, get one free offer.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WayNaturalUSA.com. WayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only 3 ingredients in WayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WHEYNaturalUSA.com.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Later in the show, Adele Musa joins us all the way from Munster, Germany, to do the Subversity Science Roundup, where we apply the sniff test to science that is being purported in the news today. We read the entire studies, not just the abstracts and the press releases, so it'll be fun. Okay, next I am joined by Dr. P.J. Brooks from the National Institute of Health. The National Institute of Health has a National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brooks.
Thanks, Carl. It's a pleasure to be on.
And this is an important topic, and this is a topic that I've been banging the drum a lot, because there's a lot of misinformation out there as it relates to alcohol consumption, its safety, its benefits, and especially as it relates to breast cancer and women. So can you talk a little bit about the research study that you published?
Sure. So to sort of start at the high level, there have been multiple studies that have demonstrated a relationship between alcohol consumption and an increased risk of breast cancer in women. Some of these go back almost 15 years. And in some cases, the risk may be numerically small, or, you know, 10% or so, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of women consume alcohol. Some 60% of women in the United States consume alcohol, and since breast cancer can be so deadly, this is a very important issue from a public health standpoint. So in this paper, what my co-author and I did, Dr. Samir Zakari, is we wanted to particularly focus on moderate alcohol consumption and its effect on breast cancer risk. And by moderate, we're talking about, you know, one drink a day or less even.
Right.
And part of what prompted us to do this study was a literature review, was some work that was published from a British study in 2009, and they identified a small risk for every alcohol drink consumed daily. And basically, some of the comments afterward were essentially that no amount of drinking could be considered safe from the standpoint of breast cancer risk. And more recent studies, we've kind of seen similar things. One of the most recent studies or meta-analysis suggested that for drinking one drink daily, it's about a 4% increase in breast cancer risk in women. And the moderate issue is really significant because, as I said, about 60% of women drink, and about half of them, based on our NIAAA statistics, consume about one drink a day. So they're moderate drinkers. And if this risk is true, it's very important. On the other hand, however, we do have evidence that moderate drinking can have health benefits as well, benefits on the cardiovascular system, benefits on bone health, etc. And some of this is based on, some of the health benefits are based on clinical and laboratory studies, and I'll distinguish that from epidemiology a little bit later. So basically, with this background, Dr. Zakari and I, we're biochemists and geneticists, and we think a lot about alcohol metabolism. And we are trying to understand how some of these effects could be seen at such low levels of alcohol. So what we did and as I said, it's an important question with regard to moderate drinking.
Right.
So the goal of our paper is to kind of look at these epidemiologic studies. And again, we're not epidemiologists, but we wanted to understand what they were doing, how the research was done,
right,
what data was collected. It sort of came down to what do we know, what can we conclude, what do we not know, what would we like to know, and then how can we find that out? Because I think all of us want to be able to provide women with the most complete information possible about the risks and benefits of moderate drinking.
Right.
So in terms of what we know, as I said, the data is based on some very large epidemiologic studies by excellent scientists at various institutions around the world. But the key point, I think, is that these are all epidemiologic studies.
Yeah, which they create statistics, but they don't always connect the right dots together.
Yeah, in a sense, that's one way of saying it. I think the important issue is when you do these epidemiologic studies, they're based on asking women how much they drink.
Right, and self-reporting has a flaw in it right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Because there's all different reasons why people don't or can't tell you accurately. And then there's people want to distinguish between types of alcohol. Well, I drink wine, that's healthy. Really? You know, the jury's still out on that one as well. So there's a lot of self-reporting has a lot of flaws in it.
Yeah, and that was kind of the main thing, that it's all based on self-report. And in fairness to the epidemiologists, to do these large studies, you sort of have to do it that way. You know, some of these studies involved hundreds of thousands, you know, almost millions of women. One of them was called the Million Women Study. So to do that, you can't sort of go without a number of people and check how much they're drinking. You really don't have a choice. And also, when you're talking about alcohol and cancer, cancer takes a very long time to develop.
Good point.
So they really had to do it this way. And so I don't want to be critical and say, oh, that was the wrong study. It's an important question. We're talking about it because it did this work.
And this was the data that was available. So you have to extrapolate from that. So what did you guys find?
Well, so we found that it's based on self-report. But then you ask, what are the questions that were asked? So in one of these studies, one of the questions was, how much do you drink in a week? And that number was divided by 7 to come up with drinks per day. And that seems reasonable, except that in reality, there's a big difference between drinking a lot on some days and nothing on the others.
Right.
Versus actually drinking one drink a day. And
right.
If you know, according to NIAAA, for a woman, 4 drinks in a day is binge drinking. And you can't sort of binge drink on some days, not drink on the others, and have it average out to
right.
moderate alcohol consumption.
Exactly.
And the reason it's significant, and this gets back to our sort of bread and butter, so to speak, is metabolism, is that the way that the body handles alcohol at high blood alcohol levels is significantly different than at low blood alcohol levels in terms of the metabolism. So there's kind of a basic, what we'll call the basic way of alcohol, of the basic alcohol metabolic process. It's kind of on all the time. You drink a little bit and it gets metabolized by a series of enzymes and ultimately excreted.
Right, and if you drink a lot, the landscape of the liver becomes compromised, especially if you drink a lot often enough, and then the metabolism goes awry and everything changes. It's a game changer, absolutely.
Well, it can, but in terms of the specific types of metabolism and metabolic enzymes, when the blood levels get elevated, there's another enzyme that is sort of recruited. It's a detoxification enzyme. The technical term is we call it CYP2E1. And the thing about CYP2E1 is when it breaks down alcohol, it generates oxygen radicals as a side effect.
Mm-hmm.
And at low blood alcohol levels, CYP2E1 doesn't get involved. So when your blood alcohol levels are high, you've got this CYP2E1 enzyme breaking down the alcohol but generating oxygen radicals. And I think based on what I've seen on your website, I think you and your listeners are familiar with the toxic effects of oxygen radicals. They can ultimately lead to DNA damage.
Right, right.
So you put all that together, and one possibility is that we sort of suggest in the paper is that in some cases what's happening is even when women are sort of saying that they're moderate drinkers, on some days they're drinking more than others, and they're inducing this CYP2E1 enzyme and generating this DNA damage.
Free radicals, right.
Yeah, and that could sort of explain it. And if you don't, you'd have to ask the question differently to sort of get at that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the main point.
Okay.
So yeah, it really depends on the question that you ask. And so more recently now, there was a paper from a group at Harvard that came out, I think earlier this year, that we talked about in our paper. And they actually did, I thought, something that was very important. They tried to get at this question. So they asked about, you know, how many days have you been binge drinking? They asked a question about binge drinking. I don't have
and
the
I have
right
to believe from. That most people don't think they're binge drinkers because they do it, you know, once a week, twice a week, but they consume what is considered a larger amount of alcohol that would make them binge drinkers, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't exactly know or they might not think about it that way. And so they asked a particular question, and the bottom line from the Harvard study was that women who noted that they were binge drinking, and I think their definition of binge drinking was 4 drinks in a day, they had a somewhat higher risk of breast cancer than people who didn't report binge drinking, even after they controlled for the total intake. I thought that was a very nice study.
Yeah.
And we talked about that in our paper. And then the one by there was a even more recent one by Dr. Klatsky from Kaiser Permanente.
Sure.
And they did it. They did a kind of a similar thing. They were looking at the relationship between moderate alcohol consumption and all different types of cancers, not just breast cancer. So they had all the moderate drinkers, but then they asked a couple other questions about had you had periods of high levels of alcohol consumption or episodes of alcohol problems. And if they did, they called these individuals suspicious, and that was the term they used. So there were suspicious moderate drinkers and not suspicious moderate drinkers. And when they separate them that way, it turned out that the cancer risk was in the suspicious drinkers.
Yeah. So we have to take a break, but it comes back to the old adage, the poison is in the dose.
Yeah, somewhere in my notes was that old, you know, from Paracelsus, right? The dose makes the poison.
Yeah, and that's been my contention, my position. I've taken a position on alcohol. I love to drink wine. I'm Italian. I was indoctrinated into drinking wine when I was just 5 years old. My grandfather used to give me a little bit of wine with my pastina when he would babysit me.
I know pastina.
Well, there you go. And I slept well as a result of that. And you know what? I love wine, but I do not try to fool myself to think that some amount of alcohol is better than none at all. None is the best. A little may be acceptable. Too much is no good. It comes down to the poison is in the dose analogy, for me at least. I like alcohol because of its drug-like effects. I don't make any apologies for that. But I'm not going to try to convince myself that drinking alcohol every day is a really good thing for me. Living without it has to be better than living with any of it.
Well, it seems like, I guess maybe after the break when we come back, we can kind of pick up on that.
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that. We're talking with Dr. P.J. Brooks. He is from the National Institute of Health, Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse, the NIAAA, and we're talking about alcohol and breast cancer. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
H4Se's most popular transdermal patches are now available as a buy one, get one free. The Testo 100 Testosterone Boosting Patch has the most comprehensive assortment of clinically proven testosterone boosters, including androstenedione, D-aspartic acid, and stinging nettle root. The Power Patch has 25 milligrams of real growth hormone per patch. Now get a two-month supply for the price of one of either patch, or combine them both for greater results. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the H4Se banner ad to learn more. Build muscle and burn fat with increased testosterone and growth hormone with this buy one, get one free offer. Never before in the history of muscle gauge nutrition have they ever been so generous, and this is only available to the Superhuman Nation. Now get 25% off any order when you use the coupon SUPER. Save on sports performance supplements like creatine, BCAAs, Huge Impact, and their flagship product, Whey Isolate. Save 25% off weight loss products like Trim Down Advance or Gauge Lean MRP, or check out their line of multivitamins formulated for men and women. Whatever you want, Muscle Gauge has it. Go to mgnstore.com and use the coupon code SUPER today. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting phoenixbioperformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's phoenixbioperformance.com. People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. WhayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WhayNaturalUSA is cold processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only three ingredients in WhayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. P.J. Brooks from the National Institute of Health's Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism Division about alcohol consumption and breast cancer. Okay, so let's pick it up on my comment about a life with no alcohol has to be better than a life with any amount of alcohol.
Well, so in NAAA, we do not recommend that people drink alcohol. Our view is that whether or not to drink or not is an individual decision that each person has to make for themselves when they get to legal drinking age, and they should weigh the risks and benefits in their own individual case and make a decision. And then if they do decide to drink alcohol, we have sort of guidelines for what we call low-risk drinking. Mm-hmm. And that means that that's really in terms of the risk of developing an alcohol use disorder primarily, the way we do it. And so for men, the definition or the guideline, I should say, for low-risk drinking is no more than 4 drinks on any single day and no more than 14 a week. And for women, it's no more than 3 drinks on a single day and no more than 7 drinks per week. So those would be the guidelines for what we call low-risk drinking. Now, there's no risk drinking. If you choose to drink alcohol, there's always some potential risks.
Bingo. I agree.
But, you know, a lot of people choose to do it. So,
No, I agree. And the analogy that I've used ad infinitum on the show that my listeners have heard me say so many times, whenever trying to show an analogy between the good in something versus the bad in something. You know, I always say, look, there's probably some nutritive value in the undigested pin oats and horse manure, but I'm not going to start eating horse manure to say, well, it's good for you when what's bad for you in the mix outweighs it. And my attitude again is, you know, alcohol has a nice drug-like effect. It gives me a buzz. It makes me relax. It greases the wheel. It makes me sociable. But I'm not going to lie to myself and say, and it's good for my heart, and it's good for my this. No, it's not good for any of those things. If it was, our body would produce it. Evolution would have made our body produce it on its own if we really needed it. So, but anyway, let's get back to the subject at hand here. The subject at hand is alcohol consumption, moderate alcohol consumption. When we determine that it's truly moderate and not what could be considered binge drinking, which is, you know, Saturday night, Friday night, she goes out with the girls and gets plastered. But then divides that by 7 in the self-reporting and find out that she's really not a moderate drinker. She's activating different things in her body because of the high level of consumption in concentrated days. What is the end result here? Is it possibly a factor in breast cancer?
So we, in looking at sort of all the data, we kind of put out there two different kind of models. Proposals, hypotheses, you might call them, to sort of explain the epidemiologic data. Because I do want to emphasize, there's quite a lot of epidemiologic data. So one possibility is that some of the effect is due to binge drinking, high levels of alcohol consumption, and CYP2E1 induction, particularly by younger women early in life. Because, again, you got to think about cancer as something that takes a long time.
Right.
So that's one possibility. There is, however, another possibility that could explain some of this, which is that you could have what we call sort of a tumor promoter effect. In other words, the alcohol you drink could act on an undiagnosed breast cancer to make it grow faster, to make it more invasive, to make it otherwise more likely to be diagnosed, and that could explain some of the results as well. It doesn't seem like that could explain all the results, because in that case, you'd only find the relationship between, you know, the drinking just a couple of years before the breast cancer.
Right.
And the epidemiology doesn't really support that as being the only mechanism, but it's certainly a possible one. And it is true that when people have looked at the types of breast cancers that are associated with alcohol consumption, they do tend to be the ones that have estrogen receptors. Mm-hmm. So they're estrogen receptor positive, and also to some extent progesterone receptors. So that suggests that there's some linkage in there. And that was another sort of a combined epidemiologic study, but they also looked at this, you know, clinical data on the tumors.
Right.
So that kind of leads into one of the other questions about what would we like to know? And one thing that I'd like to know is to get more information on those tumors. Because what you're probably aware of now, Carl, is that we can carry out DNA sequencing at a really high rate for very little money.
Right.
So you can do what they call next generation sequencing of cancers, and or you know normal cells do, but of cancers. And sometimes when you do that, what you can see is a particular pattern of mutations.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, you can link those mutations to particular types of genotoxic events. Like when you do that with skin cancer, this has been done by a group a couple of years ago, you can see sort of the fingerprints of ultraviolet light damage to the DNA. And so I think those kind of studies that are already being done, these molecular analyses of breast cancers, and then relating that as much as possible to women's, if they were drinking or not, and to see if there are differences and relating to drinking pattern, that could potentially give us some insight into
gotcha.
This. And I think that's one possibility that we're very interested in. And I think it's technically doable at this point.
We hear so much about epigenetics now, you know?
Yeah.
You talk about the fingerprint of ultraviolet, and we know so much more about the fact that we are not a hostage to our genetics. We influence how our genetics affect us. And so, you know, we're coming towards the end of the interview. And obviously, when people hear these types of things, they want to know, well, what should I do? What should I do? And obviously, the jury is still out on a lot of this research. We need more information.
Yeah.
We need to start asking, as you point out, asking the right questions is critical, and a mechanism to make sure that the information we're getting in response to the questions is accurate. Because mm-hmm. the baby goes out the window with the bathwater when we are building assumptions on erroneous information just because of the way we gathered the information. But I still have to say, and again, you have to remember, Dr. Brooks, I am not an accredited individual, so I have no governing organization that's going to threaten to take the letters off of my last after my last name. But I have to say to women that if you're concerned about breast cancer, you should absolutely cut back, if not cut out, alcohol consumption. Period. End of story. That seems to me when you can't navigate the science, you must switch over to critical thinking skills. And when you take critical thinking skills into hand and you say, well, it's even if it's not as bad for me as I think it is, it's probably not perfectly good for me either. So maybe that's something I need to navigate away from if I tend to be one of those people who has the makeup where epigenetic makeup could actually trigger a cancer in me. I think this is one of the things I'm going to stay away from. Do you think that I'm being too rigid by saying that, Dr. Brooks?
Well, let me say it this way. I think you're talking about guidelines. And so, as I mentioned, at NIAAA, we have guidelines where we consider low-risk drinking, and that is, you know, no more than 3 drinks a day on any single day, and no more than 7 drinks a week. The American Cancer Society is, you know, they're very familiar with this data, and they're, you know, tremendously knowledgeable and well-respected, and their recommendation is for women, if they do drink, is to limit their intake to no more than 1 drink a day. So if people are looking for guidelines from, you know, different agencies, NIAAA and the American Cancer Society, those are good ones. And in fact, if you did limit your intake to no more than 1 drink a day, you'd be within both guidelines. And I think in terms of guidelines, those are good ones.
Yeah.
I also think we talked about if you have a family history of breast cancer, I think you'd definitely want to talk to your doctor more, because these are sort of general guidelines. So if you have a family history, any of these mechanisms might impact it, and definitely want to talk to your doctor about your alcohol consumption.
And the other thing that people should take away from this is the overload of alcohol. You know, if you are going to drink, if you let's face it, they tried, you know, the Volstead Act. It didn't work. People want to drink. That's it. End of story. So you're never going to stop people from drinking, and I'm not suggesting that. But if you're going to drink, then at least know the facts. If you're going to have a drink, sip it, enjoy it, get the drug-like effects from it. But if you go out to get hammered like you did when you were in your 20s, know that your liver is going to be compromised, and there are going to be different changes that may actually have really, really bad effects. It's not a linear progression. It's an exponential progression. It's just from what you said about oxidative stress from some of these enzymes that are upregulated, right?
Yeah, and I think your point about it's not necessarily linear is a good one, because you do have qualitatively different processes going on at different blood alcohol levels. And I think the other point you made, one other thing we can say is if you do drink, it's always good to have food in your stomach, because that limits the uptake of ethanol into your system, and that can reduce some of the effects. And then also, one of the things, and when this CYP2A1 mechanism really made me think about binge drinking, and unfortunately, binge drinking by young women is on the rise these days, and that sort of really concerns me, because you can debate, moderate alcohol consumption. Maybe there's something good, maybe there's something bad, but with binge drinking, there's no good. It's all bad.
Yeah.
And
I like that.
The increased risk of breast cancer from binge drinking, as we sort of propose here, and we have, I think, a good mechanistic explanation. We now have some epidemiologic data. That's yet another reason for women to avoid binge drinking.
There you go. And then the last reason should be you do stupid things when you binge drink, things that you don't want to remember the next morning. That's not Dr. Brooks's area. That's my area of of discussion. But listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, making time to talk about this. This is really important. I think that alcohol consumption is viewed by many people as not only safe, but actually more beneficial. Like, well, if I drink a day, it's better for my heart. No. If you want to take my advice from it, not having a drink a day is better for your heart. Having a drink a day may not be as damaging to your heart as having four or five drinks a day. But none is better than a little, in my humble opinion.
There is evidence of some cardiovascular benefit from moderate drinking, but again, there's always going to be the other side.
There's evidence that the mitochondria becomes calcified and it causes myocyte dysfunction. There's evidence on both sides. That's when I turn to critical thinking. Alcohol is a poison. The dose is in the poison. The poison's in the dose. You have a little, you can get by with it. You start drinking a lot, you can kill yourself. I listen, Dr. Brooks. I know that you're a moderate voice here. I tend to be a little more of a zealot, but my audience knows I'm a jerk.
I would say put in a plug. I mean, if you want to get NIAAA's view, take a look at our website on moderate and binge drinking.
Yeah, that's great. And the website is
www.niaaa.nih.gov.
There you go. Go to. I'm looking
and
at it right
go
now.
There, go there and read what we have to say.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brooks.
Thanks very much, Carl.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, stay tuned. When we come back, we will have Adele Moussa on, and we will perform the Subversity Sniff Test. We got lots of great science to talk about. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success.
Never before in the history of muscle gauge nutrition have they ever been so generous, and this is only available to the Superhuman Nation. Now get 25% off any order when you use the coupon SUPER. Save on sports performance supplements like creatine, BCA BCAAs, Huge Impact, and their flagship product, Whey Isolate. Save 25% off weight loss products like Trim Down Advance or Gage Lean MRP. Or check out their line of multivitamins formulated for men and women. Whatever you want, Muscle Gage has it. Go to MGNstore.com and use the coupon code SUPER today. For the first time ever, Need to Build Muscle has introduced a fat burner that is so sophisticated, you'll realize why it took them so long to bring one to market. IntoBurn is here. Through multiple pathways and agents, IntoBurn increases thermogenesis, turns on brown adipose tissue to consume even more energy, modulates blood sugar, while insulin-mimicking agents keep insulin from spiking, stimulates beta-adrenergic activity. Heck, even the coating on the tablet contains cinnamaldehyde, a potent appetite suppressant and insulin regulator. While other fat burners focus on one or two of these pathways, IntoBurn does it all. Go to NeedToBuildMuscle.com today and start shedding fat now. Two of AgeForce's most popular transdermal patches are now available as a buy one, get one free. The Testo 100 Testosterone Boosting Patch has the most comprehensive assortment of clinically proven testosterone boosters, including androstenedione, D-aspartic acid, and stinging nettle root. The Power Patch has 25 milligrams of real growth hormone per patch. Now get a two-month supply for the price of one of either patch, or combine them both for greater results. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the AgeForce banner ad to learn more. Build muscle and burn fat with increased testosterone and growth hormone with this buy one, get one free offer. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup, brought to you by Subversity.com. Want to appear smarter in just one day? Go to Subversity.com. Read it and recite it to your friends. They'll think you're a genius. But we all know that the true genius is Adele Moussa. How you doing, Adele?
I'm doing fine, and I think I will go back to the podcast and record this one and play it every time people visit my website.
Yeah, you should. Absolutely.
Sounds like a commercial.
we talked about cancer, tumor growth during the first hour. Two different doctors came on, and I see that in the Subversity Science Roundup, you are applying the sniff test to a recent release saying that Harvard scientists have developed a personalized anti-prostate cancer vaccine. What's that all about?
Well, we all know that vaccines usually work against viruses. But the problem about viruses is actually that they are also able to change your DNA, and they are able to hide out in your body. And what we are doing when we vaccinate people is we train their immune system to be aware of this virus and to recognize it and to be able to fight it. And in essence, this is probably why the scientists called this a vaccine, because what they are doing is that they are actually looking at the molecular structure of peptides, and they are working on peptides which will enable the body to really identify cancer cells and not to stand by and just watch as the cancer grows. And there has already been some promising research in another area, which is to treat melanoma, where the scientists have already applied one of those specific peptides that works for a very certain type of melanoma, where it sends them at least to regression, or to remission, I should say. And what the scientists from Harvard are now developing, and in this case it's not yet a published paper, but was a presentation on one of those major cancer congresses in the past week, I think, where they presented their first results. And as far as the abstract and the information they published with it goes, the main idea is to really identify as much as possible of those molecular characteristics of the cancer cells, and then develop accordingly a special peptide that will allow your body to really try to attack most of the hitherto known prostate cancer types. And what's really interesting, and this is also in the title of the abstract, is that this could actually pave the way to a personalized anti-prostate cancer vaccine or peptide in this case, of course, because what's the sign of the technique the scientists have developed would theoretically in the future enable them to really look at the cancer type you have and develop a peptide that suits it perfectly, like a lock, like a key would suit a lock. And this fits in nicely with what we have had in several of the past installments already, that scientists are now really building certain molecules from scratch and understanding how the structure of the molecule really changes their effect. And for people who are familiar with performance-enhancing drugs, in those cases, scientists have long been doing this. But they are pretty simple compared to these very complex peptide structures. And at this time point, it's still unrealistic to have a really customized prostate cancer vaccine. But this idea of the universal vaccine, which has already the ability to teach the immune system to attack, let's say, 10 or 15 different subtypes of a certain prostate cancer, that would already be a major advantage over the currently available techniques.
Well, now, did these peptides, is there anything in the literature suggesting how long they last in the body? Do they have short half-lives? Do they have to be administered frequently throughout the period, the test period? Because my concern is, always, you know, the body is perfect. It knows what it wants to do. It knows what it needs to do. And introducing these peptides, if they linger, if they stay around longer than the required time to control the cancer, will they have some effect on the body that isn't suggested at this early time?
Well, of course, this will require further studies, and they are just about to start the first real studies in rodents. So it will take its time until we know. But as far as I understand the little published data they have now, this is nothing that would have to be applied forever. But this works actually like a vaccine. That's why they call it a vaccine, because once the cancer cell has been attacked one time by the immune system, it will zoom in on those in the future as well. So it's rather a short-term teacher or a short-term intervention. At least this is my understanding of what has been published on this science as of yet. And what we know from the melanoma treatments is at least that those treatments, even in the end stages, were able to add 6.7 months to the life, 6.7 months improvement in overall survival. So we have only data on patients who were for whom it was already too late to treat them with the conventional therapy, because this is an experimental drug, and usually, first of all, no insurance company will cover it, and second of all, it is not ethical to administer it to somebody who would have a chance to recover with conventional therapy. So the data is still lacking, but I think this is really an interesting approach to the whole issue. And even if it does not work out, in the process we may learn something about cancers, about those specific cancers that may have another application, or we can take a different tangent and try to attack the cancer cells from another angle. So in essence, what's the take-home message of this study is that it's becoming more and more possible and more feasible to really look into how the cells, or what the cells do and how they look on a molecular level. and to look on specific markers on them, which we could set a peptide on or put a peptide on for the immune system to recognize it as a foreigner and detect it. And I think this would enable us to beat cancer actually with its own weapons, because one of the really nasty things about cancer is that it's part of our body, and it's actually our immune system considers it good not to attack it.
Right.
Otherwise, this would be autoimmunity. And so if we find a way to really isolate the cancer cell and tell the rest of the body, this is not part of you, this is a foreigner, attack it, this could solve the problem. On the other hand, you're perfectly right. Whenever you're doing stuff like this, you could do permanent damage in terms of autoimmune reactions against other tissues. So therefore, you really have to be careful. And that's also the reason that the melanoma peptide, which is obviously already available, is not used in anyone who has a chance of being of having his cancer healed with a classical chemotherapy.
Okay, look what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to kind of stay in this region. I want to continue to talk about men and the prostate region. I want to talk about the hormonal evaluation in premature ejaculation. Premature ejaculation is as big a problem for some men as is erectile dysfunction. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We're talking with Adele Musa, and this episode is being brought to you by Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. Visit Supversity.com today. You won't even have to listen to my show anymore. You'll be too smart for me. You can come do the show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com. Nutrition.com today.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechanical Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click
the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Two of AgeForce's most popular transdermal patches are now available as a buy one, get one free. The Testo 100 Testosterone Boosting Patch has the most comprehensive assortment of clinically proven testosterone boosters, including androstenedione, the aspartic acid, and stinging nettle root. The Power Patch has 25 milligrams of real growth hormone per patch. Now get a two-month supply for the price of one of either patch, or combine them both for greater results. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the AgeForce banner ad to learn more. Build muscle and burn fat with increased testosterone and growth hormone with this buy one, get one free offer.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup, where Adele Moussa applies the Subversity Sniff Test. Adele, can you hear this song?
Yeah.
Are they speaking German?
They are in type of song, yes. People know borders, the part you just turned on loud.
Oh, really? It's called People Who Know No Borders?
Yeah, and the song is not called People You Know No Borders. I'm not sure what the actual name of the song was, but the line that was just...
The lyric, okay. Yeah, I've often wanted you to... We have a lot of mashups that have German lyrics, and I've often wanted to have you translate them for me, because I want to make sure that we're not saying any curse words or anything inappropriate over the air, that's all.
Interestingly, in Germany, things are not getting so inappropriate as fast as they are in the U.S. So, on the one hand, there is a trend to always emulate the U.S. here in Germany, but when it comes to swearing, for example, on the television, almost every evening show has it. So it's not that you get those beeps and bleeps.
Okay, let's talk about a study that came out of Istanbul, Turkey. Hormonal evaluation in premature ejaculation. What did we learn? What did they want us to think? And what really is the result of this research?
Well, it's quite interesting that we really don't know exactly what the reasons of premature ejaculation is. I think at least since the movie American Pie, everybody will know that this can be a serious problem. And I think it's little talked about, but according to the few figures that exist, 22 to 38% of the men suffer from at least, depending on the criteria of what you call too fast, premature ejaculation. So it's really affecting men, of course, also in all age groups. So even pubes or teenagers can have it, whether you won't find many with real erectile dysfunction among the teenagers or the men in the 20s. And therefore, researchers are really interested to find out what the reason actually is. And this recent study from Turkey looked at several hormonal patterns, and the only one which was clearly and distinctly significantly associated, or the only two which were associated with premature ejaculation, were actually high prolactin levels and high free T4 levels. Now, in this particular study, as so often, they just measured the T4 levels, so I can't say whether the T3 levels will have to be also high, and the problem occurs, but it's quite interesting that we know that people with hyperthyroidism often develop or often have high prolactin levels. So the two appear in conjunction anyway. So it appears logical to me that that in this case this is nothing like elevated T4 levels and insufficient conversion to T3, which is another problem many people are facing today. And the researchers believe that this is part of a general pattern where people are in a sort of on the one hand high metabolic state, but also a highly stressed state. Because if you think about prolactin, You usually think about its release after an orgasm. But interestingly, it also goes hand-in-hand with chronic stress and cortisol. So chronically elevated prolactin levels are often observed in people who are chronically stressed. And on the other hand, there have been thousands of psychologists who have addressed this issue of premature ejaculation. And it is, as a matter of fact, that part of it is obviously also psychological, because if you are going to have sexual intercourse and already expect that it's going to happen too fast and are afraid, you're almost guaranteed that it will happen too fast. And this is, in a way, it's a vicious circle, but what the pattern the psychologist identified is quite intriguing, because often people who are never satisfied with themselves and never satisfied with being just 100% are suffering from this problem. And those people are usually also very high in dopamine, which actually suggests that they should be low in prolactin, because these are antagonists.
Right, but because dopamine actually inhibits the production of prolactin.
Exactly, but in this case, to some extent, for whatever reason, this usual circle seems to be out of whack, or this control circle seems to be out of whack. And this really contributes to the etiology. And once you've had it for some time, I believe, and this is also supported by scientific evidence, that it gets really, really difficult to get rid of it again. So there have been trials with all sorts of psychological treatments and training regimens.
Well, you know what? Adele, I think I know what the problem is. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, I'm not accredited, so I can say stupid stuff. But the reality is, I think that these people have a hypersensitivity to dopamine, so the body doesn't produce nearly as much dopamine. The brain responds to much lower levels of dopamine. These people probably tend to become, I'm talking about real premature ejaculators, not the guy who orgasms sooner than he wants to. I'm talking about the guys who, you know, as soon as they get into the throes of things, sometimes before the pants come off, they orgasm. These people have a hypersensitivity to dopamine, and serotonin dance is thrown so far out of whack for them that they become so easily excited. I predict that these people become easily excited and in normal stressful situations, these people probably end up with palpitations, and they become very, very flustered, and they don't deal with stress in general very easily, because they are hypersensitive to dopamine's effects. That's my theory.
Well, did you read all the reviews before the show? Because this is quite an interesting theory, and there are few experts who already suggested just that. And what really supports the theory is also that the single one real, well, quote unquote, effective strategy to battle this is to take a serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And this works magic. Although you would assume that taking something like, what's it called?
L-tryptophan.
The herb that's supposed to increase dopamine.
Yes. The cholinergic, lectin. The cholinergic drugs. I'm trying to think of one of them. Something tryptin. I'm trying to think of a couple of them. There's quite a few of them. But anyway.
No, I'm just... about Vitex, which is also used.
Yes, Vitex, that's it. Yes, because it reduces prolactin by increasing dopamine. Yes, exactly.
Exactly, and this does quite the opposite, and this would support your theory that the actual problem is this hyper-excitability at the brain, at the level of the brain. And on the other hand, we all know that being on an SSRI for a lifetime is not exactly what most people want to do. And once you stop the therapy, the problem usually reoccurs immediately. And therefore, we are still looking for a solution. And this would be another area where, for example, looking at the receptor level, at the exact mechanics, you could say, of the receptor, could maybe provide a way to to partly block the receptor at the level of the brain and produce a sensitivity to dopamine so that the body will increase dopamine levels overall, which would help to decrease the prolactin levels. But as of now, we are just in the situation that it's not really treatable. But I think it's really worth to mention that this is not about being a loser or that you're the exception, the total exception, one in a billion. If you hear the figure that 22 to 30% of men have some kind of premature ejaculation, maybe even that can help some of the people who already are dopamine-driven, because it reduces the pressure of being a high performer, so to say.
Right, right. And you know, we have to take a break, but taking a small amount of tryptophan, you know, a couple hours before you think you're going to get busy with your loved one, can give you enough serotonin production to push back a little bit and last a little bit longer. You got to be careful. There's a very, very fine line between helping you regulate your orgasm and shutting down your libido completely. But if you experiment,
exactly.
If you experiment with the L-tryptophan, you may find some solutions there.
Yeah. And it's probably safer in this regard than a real regular SSRE, because those tend to have the opposite effect. As soon as you take enough that you're not ejaculating prematurely, the other incidents will happen that you are not ejaculating at all.
And
that you have erectile dysfunction.
Yeah. Yeah, so you lose your orgasm entirely, and that's obviously not the goal. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Adele, I want to talk about the interaction of supplements and prescription drugs. I think that this is an important discussion for our audience to hear, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so stay tuned. You're listening to the Supversity Science Roundup, brought to you by Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. We'll be right back.
Yippee, yippee, yeah, yippee, yeah. Come on, look, let me, let me.
Endorsed a training guide before, The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0 plus ongoing support on the Blueprint Forum to ensure your success.
Over 35% of all men over 20 will struggle with painful chronic prostatitis at some time in their lives. Relaxin is a novel dietary supplement shown in a preliminary retrospect study to be more effective than antibiotics at relieving symptoms of chronic prostatitis. Relaxin is safe and effective for men. If you suffer from prostatitis and don't want to take powerful drugs, antibiotics, or risk procedures, give Relaxin a try. Go to bioadvantex.com to learn more. That's bioadvantex.com. Stop living with embarrassing pain and symptoms associated with chronic prostatitis today. Get Relexin, R-E-L-E-X-I-N.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
The cornerstone of longevity medicine is preserving or improving telomere length by increasing telomerase. Telomeres are the repair kit for your DNA. Maintaining DNA integrity is an important factor in staying young and disease-free. If you're like me, a telomerase activator isn't optional, it's a necessity. The only clinically proven telomerase activator in the world is TA65. That's why I take TA65 every day, and you should too. You can learn more about TA65 by visiting TASciences.com. That's TASciences.com. MassPro.com.
MassPro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it. For the first time ever, Need to Build Muscle has introduced a fat burner that is so sophisticated, you'll realize why it took them so long to bring one to market. IntuBurn is here. Through multiple pathways and agents, IntuBurn increases thermogenesis, turns on brown adipose tissue to consume even more energy, modulates blood sugar, while insulin-mimicking agents keep insulin from spiking, stimulates beta-adrenergic activity. Heck, even the coating on the tablet contains cinnamaldehyde, a potent appetite suppressant and insulin regulator. While other fat burners focus on one or two of these pathways, IntuBurn does it all. Go to NeedToBuildMuscle.com today and start shedding fat now.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio and the Subversity Science Roundup. And we're gonna switch into something that's really important. Adele is put together quite a big list. Adele, is this on your blog already, the list of interactions?
No, it's not. I'm still thinking about a way to present it a little more understandable, because if you are not familiar with all those drug names, you can hardly read this list, unless you look for a drug you are taking. But I hope that most of the people who are reading my blog aren't taking so much medication as right. on there.
Well, I mean, the first one on the list is 5-HTP. And a drug called Fluxetine,
yeah.
I'm sorry, which also has several generic names, including sertraline, which actually increases dopamine, from what I remember.
I think it's an SSRI.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. It reduces dopamine. Yes, it's an SSRI. You're right.
Yeah.
And the risk of serotonin syndrome. And serotonin syndrome will stop you in your tracks from having an orgasm.
Of course it will, but it can be fatal, because in one of the side effects, for example, is tachycardia, so a very rapid heartbeat, and that's really not a condition you want to be in. It's not like the more serotonin, the happier you are. The only negative side effect is that you may not get excited enough to have an erection. No, that's unfortunately not the case. So this is one of those. Actually, you can identify several different types of interactions, and this is one of the. I take a supplement, although I already take a drug that does the same, and I thereby often do not just double the reaction, but oftentimes multiply it, because they are working through slightly different pathways. For example, on the one hand, you take a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, which disables your brain's ability to get rid of serotonin, and also to handle the serotonin release and reuptake by itself. And on the other hand, you're trying to boost it by supplementing with 5-HTP. And this is one of the fundamental no-nos of taking a supplement that actually does the same as a drug you are already taking. You wouldn't want to take tons of fish oil if you are already on warfarin, because your blood is literally going to turn to water, so to say, because it's so liquid due to the double effect.
Right. Okay. There's quite a large list of important ones here. Things that, I mean, acacia is all the rage right now. Acacia drinks, acacia berry, acacia this, acacia that. Meanwhile, acacia interacts with a very, very common, highly prescribed antibiotic, correct?
Yeah, it's amoxicillin or amoxicillin.
Amoxicillin. Most of us have taken amoxicillin for something, and most of us have given our children amoxicillin. So if you're taking acacia and amoxicillin, the amoxicillin may not work. Is that correct?
Yeah, because it blocks the absorption. And this would be mechanism number two, that something at the level of the digestive system happens. For example, calcium is also notorious for doing this. And people who are taking thyroid medications must never take them together with a calcium supplement, because especially the synthetic form of T4 is the absorption of the letter is really reduced when you're taking it with calcium. And other salts, magnesium carbonate, for example, will also hamper it slightly, but it appears that it's more the calcium than the carbonate form that really reduces the uptake of thyroid medication. So this is the second category is inhibition of uptake of certain medication. And in the case of an antibiotic, that may not be so bad. But if you're taking another medication, which you must take, because if you're taking it for, say, 3 days, your situation can become so bad that you will have to go to the hospital. And then it turns out you just started supplement X, and this hampers the absorption. And therefore you land in the emergency room, or you're going to go into the emergency room. This is something you certainly want to avoid. And actually, this is a very important review, and it's also part of the editorial of the International Journal of Clinical Practice, where the editor states that it is important to even go further and to compile sort of a compendium for doctors to have this at hand and even maybe incorporate it into their software where they pick the medications and prescribe it to their patients. So that they would see actually which dietary supplements could interact here, because everybody knows meanwhile about the interactions of
grapefruit. I was going to say grapefruit.
Grapefruit and San Transwort, those are the ones everybody knows.
Right.
But there are much more, and actually the current list describes, according to the overview the researchers present, a total of 509 unique drugs contributed to the 1,491 documented trace of interaction with dietary supplements.
Well, let's do this. Let's hit a couple more important ones, and then you'll put this up on your blog eventually. I say you put it up on your blog and let people figure it out on their own, be honest with you. But I think the people will go there and they'll read these and they'll go, oh, my father takes it. I mean, alfalfa and warfarin or Coumadin. I'm assuming alfalfa because of the vitamin K, it counteracts the blood thinning effects, correct?
Probably, yeah.
So in that case, really, any greens. But the reason alfalfa is because if you buy those whole food supplements and they give you one of the supplements is supposed to have your phytonutrients from vegetables and stuff. It's usually a pressed green pill. 99% of that time, that's alfalfa. That's all it is. So that's a really important one. Here's another one that's important. So many of us take an L-arginine, arginine, alpha-ketoglutarate, blah, 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 because we're looking for a pump. But it interacts with, well, obviously nitroglycerin, because nitroglycerin is a vasodilator. But the one that threw me was spironolactone, which is a potassium-sparing a diuretic, correct?
Yeah, it is. And this is actually something many bodybuilders take arginine for, because it is a slight diuretic, and also one that helps you to get rid of the salt and not the potassium. And when you are losing the salt and keeping the potassium in, and add in spironolactone, then you are at a potential risk of hyperkalemia, and this could probably lead, or could in the worst
kill you,
lead heart arrest.
I mean, it could kill you. There's a lot of athletes who've died because of hyperkalemia, a rapid and dramatic increase in potassium stops the heart.
Yeah, and an interesting thing is also that when you're working out, your blood levels of potassium are already high, and this is something people don't really realize, because potassium is an intracellular iron, and sodium is its extracellular counterpart, so to say. And there's the ratio must be exact to keep the cells intact and to keep the influx and efflux of those ions functioning. And when you're working out, especially when you're training really hard, some of the potassium will remain outside in the blood. And therefore, it's not really useful to supplement with potassium while you're working out, at least not with potassium only. And this is also why, although, of course, coconut water is a very good source of minerals, it's really too low in salt. If you are really sweating and working out hard, you need more salt,
right?
Especially because it's high in potassium.
Now, here's another one. I'm trying to jump through the list at the ones that really hit hard, and this list will be on subversity.com for those of you who need to read this, or you should read this. Some of these are shocking to me. Ginkgo and ginkgo biloba, obviously, which is supposed to increase mental acuity, and aspirin, as well as risperidone and trazodone. Isn't risperidone a bronchial dilator, if I'm correct? Risk of bleeding is increased dramatically when taking ginkgo.
That's specific to aspirin. The risk with risperidone is that the side effects of this particular medication will increase. So the risk of bleeding is associated with aspirin, especially. So we all know that aspirin already increases the risk of bleeding, and if you put ginkgo on top and maybe even warfarin, throw some warfarin into the mix, you better not cut yourself. And, of course, you better not get, for whatever reason, maybe due to an old ulcer opening itself in your stomach. If that happens, you have to really hurry to the emergency room when you're on the medication, on the blood-thinning medication, adding ginkgo and aspirin. This is exactly one of those pairs where you have multiplying effects, because they work through slightly different pathways. And usually it's not that bad if you take a supplement and a drug which has exactly the same mechanism, because this will quote unquote only add up. But if you have a supplement and a medication that works differently, then the effects are not additive, or usually not additive. But you cannot really predict them.
You know,
I'm
sorry.
What's quite interesting also, that warfarin is one of those drugs. Either on the one hand, it's one of the best researched drugs, because it's really dangerous if you don't really hit the mark with it. So scientists have spent much time in working out whether there are interactions. But for warfarin alone, there are roughly 150 interactions with dietary supplements known, and this tells you much about first of all, the safety of this drug, but also of how widespread the interactions actually probably are for other medications as well.
There are so many important ones on here. We cannot get to all these. You have to put this up in your blog and let people sort it out. Melatonin is listed on here as has some drug interactions. Kava and what's the other one I was looking at here? Dong Quai. Digitalis, if anybody is taking anything with foxglove in it, throw it away now. Bitter orange, these are all things that you'll find in a lot of these supplements that are fat loss supplements. N-acetylcysteine, niacin is on here, and some of the important vitamins, A, E, K, all on this list with drug interactions. People need to know about this. Some of these I'm looking at going, wow, I need to be careful, because there's certain supplements I'm taking that have some of these things, and there's some supplements I'm taking as well, and it's like maybe I need to back off of something. This is a very important list, Adele. You need to get it up on your blog. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk briefly about milk, okay? You know that's a subject near and dear to my heart. We're talking with Adele Moussa, author of Subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. Stay tuned. We will be right back. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Best Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WayNaturalUSA.com. WayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only 3 ingredients in WayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WheyNaturalUSA.com. Never before in the history of muscle gauge nutrition had they ever been so generous. And this is only available to the superhuman nation. Now get 25% off any order when you use the coupon SUPER. Save on sports performance supplements like creatine, BCAAs, Huge Impact, and their flagship product, Whey Isolate. Save 25% off weight loss products like Trim Down Advanced or Gage Lean MRP, or check out their line of multivitamins formulated for men and women. Whatever you want, Muscle Gauge has it. Go to MGNstore.com and use the coupon code SUPER today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yo, mic check, mic check.
Yo, yeah, mic check, mic check.
Yeah, I heard he got that hot new thing.
Heard he got that hot new thing at Subversity.com. Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. Adele, tell me the good news about milk in the news. First of all, am I correct? You sent me a study that actually compared raw milk to ultra-pasteurized milk when looking at the amount of metals in the milk?
Yeah, exactly. I was quite astonished to find this because there are not so many studies comparing them. Often they are looking which one has more bacteria in it.
And right.
This is actually not very useful because we all know that the pasteurized milk will have lower bacteria count, at least as long as it's not over its best per use date, because afterwards it's acquiring those bacteria like crazy, because there is nothing in it left that would actually reduce the bacterial infection.
Right.
So this particular study was conducted in the Slovak Republic. It's not very surprising that this is not study from the US or any of our some also Germany where it's not really a question that you don't drink raw milk. Because we do have free access to raw milk, but if you're telling anybody that you want to have raw milk and you want to drink raw milk, everybody will roll his eyes and say, "Are you crazy? You are going to get sick." And so it's not much different over here in Germany, at least as far as the public perception goes.
Right.
And what the study did was actually they wanted to know what's the difference? What happens in the steps between and during the high heat processing, And what they found, or the most significant differences they found when the analyst analyzed the mineral content, was actually the copper level. So while in the raw milk there is about 4 milligrams per kilo or per liter, and the heat treated there's just 1 milligram left of it. So where is the copper going? You could ask, and actually scientists are not really sure where it's going. But another thing that's interesting is that it appears that at least from human studies we know that in in formula that is based on pasteurized milk is it has been shown that the minerals are not as readily absorbed as they are from human breast milk, and also not if human breast milk is exposed to high heat treatments, the mineral absorption usually is reduced. So it could possibly be that some loss of minerals adheres there. On the other hand, this is in a way sort of problematic to go to the supermarket and buy products and test them for mineral contents, because it will also depend on the amount of those specific minerals in the feed of dairy. So you can obviously change the ratios of certain minerals by feeding the cows different.
Well, just letting the cows eat grass exclusively, as opposed to man supplied feeds, changes the mineral content and everything else about the milk.
Yeah. For example, there are several types of Swiss cheese which are produced only in a special season when the cows are eating a certain flowering plant on the highlands there that will give the cheese a certain aroma.
Yes.
It doesn't have. It's the same milk from the same cows, but they didn't have those flowering herbs in there. It will taste very differently.
Those of us who are devotees of raw milk know when your cow has gotten into a scallion patch, an onion patch, because the milk smells and tastes like onion. I mean, so whatever the cow eats comes right out and goes into your milk. This is why it's so critical that these cows eat natural diets.
Yeah.
So now the interesting thing about this was the fact that there was so much more copper in the raw milk, and you and I have discussed copper in the past, and I think we ought to give a piece of information that can actually help some people, especially bodybuilders and those who tend to have higher resting blood pressures because of whatever. Copper is severely deficient in our diet today, is it not?
Well, there are two camps. One camp says it is deficient. The other camp points at the evidence that there are more and more people accumulating copper. But this is a difference. It's not that's the same with iron. Iron per se is no problem. The problem arises when you don't manage iron properly. And there's been another study released as of late that shows that one of the main problems is that insulin, high insulin levels, will increase the iron absorption, and it will make the protein, which is otherwise responsible for regulating the iron uptake from your gut, it would just override its action. So regardless of the fact that your body tries to reduce iron uptake, due to the high insulin being present, the iron uptake will stay high and elevated. And this combines with a conditional liver disease you will get or see in metabolic syndromes will disable your body's ability to really handle those minerals. And I suppose it's not much different for copper, because the accumulation of copper in the tissue is mainly a function of taking way too much copper. But we are talking about, let's say, supplementing maybe 1 to 2 grams per day, milligrams per day, not taking it kilo-wise, or
right,
especially not in organic forms, which is, in which case, almost all minerals are getting toxic. And as you said, copper has very, very important functions in the body, also in the formation of red blood cells. And it usually works hand in hand with iron. And therefore, I suppose that we are seeing actually the same or different phases of maybe the same problem, which is a problem of handling those two minerals properly that they are accumulating in our tissues, and especially in the liver, which is actually the organ which is supposed to distribute them to the target tissue in your body. And maybe you want to go back to the heart and give some bit on its function there.
Right, and that's an important function. Copper's role with the heart. Adele sent me a study many months ago that showed that rats that had their aorta banded to create pressure in the heart to create the model of hypertension developed hypertrophy and some even myopathies, which were completely reversed once they started supplementing with the human dose of 3 milligrams of copper a day. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So, you know, for those of us out there who, you know, I'm not saying that everybody should go out and buy copper supplements, but what I am saying is you should be getting at least the RDA of copper, if not a little bit more of copper every day in your diet, and it should be coming from, most likely, depending on where you're getting your vegetables from and so on. And if you're drinking raw milk, there seems to be more copper in raw milk as well. So.
Yeah, it is. And it's also... A problem I personally see is the overconsumption of zinc will really hamper the uptake of copper, and it will also increase the copper you will need, because the two are in balance, and people will probably remember the one blog post I had back in 2 months ago, I think, about high zinc intake being associated with, or actually experimentally proven to induce insulin resistance. And since copper is of fundamental importance in insulin metabolism as well, this could also be a function of taking so much zinc that it does not really matter how much copper you get. You are always sort of deficient when it comes to the ratios.
Well, and that's really I want to stop there for a second. That's really important, especially to this audience, because there's a lot of you out there taking a ZMA supplement because you've been told that it's going to aid in your testosterone elevation. And there's a lot of people out there taking a lot of zinc. And, you know, this is when it comes back to that old saying I have, you know, the good thing about supplements is they work. The bad thing about supplements is they work. And you can't just supplement with one mineral without understanding its relationship and its needed balance with other minerals. So if you're going to take ZMA, you're probably going to have to up your doses of other things too.
Yeah, and this does not work infinitely. So you can't take 150 or 200 milligrams of zinc and say, okay, then I'm just taking 100 milligrams of copper to counter it. This may not be as harmful as just taking, as avoiding copper, because I know many people are really looking at a supplement that has copper in it, whatever ridiculously low amount, and say, oh no, copper toxicity, I can't take this. On the other hand, they are taking religiously their ZMA tablet every evening, and in addition, one of those high-performance multivitamins, which also has 30 to 50 milligrams, and maybe a pre-workout product, which also has zinc in it. And this really leads to problems, and it goes back to what I said in the past installment about folic acid. You really have to make sure you read the whole label and not just how many carbohydrates and how many salt is in there, because neither carbs nor salt are your enemy, but everything in excess is your enemy, and all the good things can easily turn against you when you're not really paying attention to what you're stuffing down your pie hole in form of supplements. I mean, We have just talked about the problems that arise with drugs, but you don't even have to add drugs. If you take enough supplements, you can do major harm with all of those alone.
Right, right. You know, there are so many good stories and good topics that Adele sent for today's show, but there's never enough time to cover them all. Will you be doing a Supversity Science Roundup Seconds again as a result of all the research?
I will.
Yeah. That's really good.
To be in the future, I will do this every Friday. But when the podcast is online, the day later, because it's in the evening here now, and tomorrow when I have time, I will put together the rest, or at least the interesting pieces, and the one I've already announced today in the sneak preview into a whole post, and I will see to include the tabular overview. I obviously cannot copy and paste it, because this would be a disregard of all the work scientists did, and also a copyright problem. So I will have to find a way to summarize it for everyone to at least know which type of drug, or to identify maybe those items which are of which I believe that many of the Superhuman Radio listeners will be interested in, because they could be taking the supplement, or maybe they know someone who's on that drug. To just copy and paste the list, unfortunately, won't work.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Again, the website is supversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Adele Moussa puts a lot of work into the Supversity Science Roundup. So please patronize him by visiting his website often, daily, in fact. Also, I'd like to thank Dr. Mikhail, Kolonin, I'm sorry, from the University of Texas at Houston, for talking about how obesity affects tumor growth regardless of diet. And then, of course, Dr. P.J. Brooks from the National Institute of Health Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse Division, NIAA, for discussing the recent science related to moderate alcohol consumption and breast cancer for women. Adele, thanks for being on the show, brother.
You're welcome.
Okay, and we'll see everybody tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, which means we have an episode of Casual Friday to do. Thanks for listening.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.